Christopher Mulan, founder and chief market strategist of thetechnicaltraders.com. Thanks for joining me today.
Always a pleasure, Tom. It's been a while.
Absolutely, it has. Good to see you again, Chris. And I want to, unfortunately, start by repeating myself. There's a tweet that I've been going back to over the last little bit here, but it was basically showing us that gold is at a record high, silver, home prices, copper, platinum, money market funds, US debt, deficit spending, and household debt, all at record highs. So how much caution is warranted in a situation where all 10 of these things are at all-time highs?
I think it's definitely a lot of warning signs. That's a lot of things to check off the list. I mean, just the fact that gold and silver are outperforming and rocketing higher and have come to life is, to me, is the biggest flag waving in front of our face saying people don't trust what's going on. They see or they think things are broken or they know something big is broken. We just haven't seen the news really hit yet. So that is the big red flag. But the fact that everybody's overextended, I mean, right now we're seeing like record amounts of people putting their groceries on like layaway, like pay over time your groceries. I mean, talk about a death spiral of debt. It's scary. There's high precious metal pricing means something is wrong. The people know it. They don't trust systems, governments, currencies, the economy, excuse me. And we just need to be aware that something most likely bad is going to happen. We've seen this happen in previous times where we see precious metals rocket higher in 2007. Usually something bubbles to the surface that eventually that big correction will be called after. It could be the financial crisis, could be the tech bubble, could be the AI, you know, bubble, whatever it is. But we need to be aware. There's a lot of scary stuff going on. And, you know, it's not, you know, every bubble and every big rally is always totally different, different reasons, different economy, different mindset of people. But, you know, there's a lot of things that kind of rhyme in terms of the precious metal space. The way that the dollar's been moving, that gold, silver, platinum, and palladium have been moving in the last few months are very similar price action-wise to what happened just before they peaked and before the economy peaked in 2007. And then we also have this other giant bubble drag all the indices higher, the AI bubble. And we've got every frenzy of venture capital chasing to get into AI, investments into AI, makes every other bubble we've seen look dwarfed in terms of dollars. And so we kind of also have this tech bubble that, yeah, the AI is big, it's changing, it's important, and it's going to change the way, but these companies are spending hand over fist and they're really not making money. And so we've got, like, you know, a lot of high valuation. And add to that, we've got the race of the trillion dollar IPOs, right? SpaceX. We got OpenAI. There's a couple other big ones that are hundreds of billions of dollars. These are the richest, some of the smartest people in the world. Why are they racing to get their IPOs to market? And we've seen this before, just before major peaks, going back to almost every financial reset, huge, the biggest of the biggest companies go for IPOs and then the old economy crashes. So there's a lot of warning signs out there.
Absolutely. And I think it's always difficult to kind of really tease out, let's say, the minutia of what's propelling these markets. Like you mentioned, gold and silver are showing signs that the population, let's say, senses that something is wrong. But, you know, we've also seen central bank buying. There's absolutely, in silver, there's got to be a factor of FOMO going into that. So, you know, I think that's a good time to kind of like step back and remind ourselves, especially from your perspective, that the technical charts are a better way to kind of try and manage this rather than trying to understand every piece of noise and every piece of news that goes into moving these markets.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt we've got the perfect storm brewing for precious metals. I mean, currencies are down, there's global wars, there's country takeovers in talks. There's just a lot unfolding that feeds into this. And I mean, that's why we're seeing everything rocket higher. I mean, we can look at the charts and silver is just screaming some very, very scary price patterns. I mean, it's exciting when I'll pull the chart of silver up so we can take a look at it. When we take a look at the monthly chart of silver, I mean, I'll go way back here to the 70s. I mean, we were in a parabolic spike, and it's a little intimidating. And what goes straight up generally comes straight back down. I think there could be a lot of pain in this market in terms of where things are could end up in the next little bit. But I mean, you got to be aware, like when something goes straight up like this, usually there's some big shift, right? Some generational or like some paradigm shift that is triggering it. And you know, we've got to be aware that, you know, everything when money comes this easy, like I've been in the precious metal space for a long time, and right now it's almost like every day it feels like silver goes up 5%. The money that anybody in the precious metal space is making and gaining almost every week here, it feels like free money and easy come, easy go. You got to be aware when something's really easy and everyone's buying it. You know, Costco's sold out, post office in Canada used to sell precious metals. Well, they still do, but they're always sold out. People are giving it away for Christmas who aren't in the precious metals space. It's insane. These are usually the last signs. Now, a lot of people are saying this time is different and every time is different. But I do think we could go into a very big shift where I do think we're going to see precious metals. I think we're going to see silver blast through 100, no problem. I think we're going to hit 106, maybe even 120, but then we're going to have some type of big correction. But the metals are there's no doubt we're in a time, and if we look at gold, it's very similar. We've got this huge move, and it is warning us that something is up. And, you know, as much as we all like gold and we want to just keep going higher and higher, usually things don't go straight up forever, right? There's going to be some reset. And when the general public is all buying silver and gold at the corner store, it's usually a sign you do need to be aware that maybe it's a little frothy temporarily.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, if we could go back to the silver chart, I want to ask you how you end up kind of, let's say, establishing a position in a market like this and how you manage your risk as it goes straight up, as we can see.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a technical trader, so I follow price. Price is the only thing. I don't buy into the news. I don't do the gold silver ratio. I don't do any of that stuff. I just, if something is starting an uptrend and it shows signs of strength, I want to own it. If it's not, I don't want to own it. And so, I mean, we can look into the silver chart. It depends on the time frame. I mean, let's just zoom back here. So, for example, the first real precious metals move that I got into was early 2000. That was like the start of a major super cycle in commodities, precious metals. That was the first big wave I got into, did very well, got back into a new wave in 2009 mostly I just traded miners. I didn't even do anything with physical metals back then. And then eventually we saw this big top we saw silver and everything sell off. And then in 2019, is when gold and silver actually started a new super cycle. It had built a base. I generally use gold for not silver for charting when to get in and out of precious metals. I generally focus on gold, but more or less gold and silver had a new super cycle start in 2019. That was when I got into this position saying, okay, what's happening in 2019 is very similar price-wise as what happened in early 2000s when it started to break out and started that super cycle. So that's where I got mostly heavily positioned a long time ago. I added on the COVID crash of 2020, just silver, a ton of silver. And I've been holding it ever since. And I've got my position. I got my allocation. I don't really get in and out and trade it. We have traded silver with an ETF for a short-term trade. Recently, we got in, made a 20% move, got out of it. It was just that. It was a short ETF trade or quick ETF trade. But when I trade precious metals, I'm looking for these big moves. I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this type of move. And then I'm looking for, after a reset, I'm looking for the next type of move. And then, of course, this one built a base. And then I'm looking for this move. And I'm also looking for this next blast off move. And gold shows it a little kind of cleaner. Gold built this beautiful base, this rounding bottom, it had a clear resistance level. And then it broke out in 2019 over here. And then it's been a very simple, clean trade. I've always liked gold for that reason. It has clean signals. It trends very nicely. It's not nearly as volatile as silver, so you can put more money to work and not have to sweat bullets. It's not going to move 20% in 2 days. But that's it in a nutshell. I mean, we've played these breakouts with some short-term trades. When it breaks out, we catch some of these thrusts to the upside. We're long gold again for another trade, catching this thrust, which I believe is going to take us to 5,200. When it comes to precious metals, I really just follow the charts, and the charts tell you what people are thinking, feeling, and what they're doing with their money. And I wait for gold to confirm that it's in an uptrend, and I jump on that train as it's leaving the station. So this is a big difference. A lot of people always try to pick bottoms, which they try to pick a bottom here and they pick a bottom here and then they pick a bottom here, and they're constantly trying to pick a bottom, which is fine in the long run. Everybody's got their own ways of doing it. But you also waste, 10 years of time of no real return, a lot of stress. I like to buy something when it's broken through, it's already had a nice run. I want to catch it when the train is leaving the station. We had a breakout here, we play here, we played a breakout over here. So the big difference, what I do is I let the train come, park, get its new load of people on, get build up energy. And then as it starts to leave the station, I'm like, holy crap, this is it. It's going. I run and I jump on it. It's already made a good move. This is what throws a lot of people for a loop. And I'm not chasing big returns. I'm protecting my capital. And if I protect my capital, then I don't have to worry about big losses or anything like that. But for example, gold rallied from the low all the way to a breakout point, 100%. And I mean, that's a huge move overall, but I also don't really want to go, in a nutshell, it's actually only up a few percent from the peak. So you're going through 10 years of no returns. I mean, we did get in over here, we got back in over here, but I like to get on something as it's moving, and I want returns right away. I don't want to wait 5, 10, 15 years for that. So
Tying
that's the
up
big
capital.
difference. I don't trade precious metals as the world's collapsing and falling apart. I trade precious metals in like, hey, it looks like it's going to generate a return, get me into it. And then when it starts to stall out, I'm like, where else can I go? Could be real estate, could be stocks, could be bonds, could be a currency. I just move to whatever asset class is moving up. And I try not to get too attached to it.
Chris, of course, after moves like we've seen in gold and silver here, we should be expecting some type of a consolidation or a pullback. How do you type or try to measure where that possible next floor is after, such an explosive move as we've seen in both gold and silver here?
Yeah. So the best ways to do it is to use like a Fibonacci retracement, which tells you kind of where a healthy pullback and the most likely pullback based on Fibonacci theory and how the universe and everything seems to work of where that should be. Now, if we were to just zoom into the daily chart of gold real quick, we can look at this last rally up and flag, and then we've got this new rally up and flag. Well, based on these platforms, we can get an extension, an idea of where this next move should be. So based on this move up, this pullback, it tells us where the next target for gold is, which is roughly about 5170, somewhere in that range. And so you're asking, where should we expect it to pull back? Well, if we go back to the monthly chart and look at this, let me actually stay zoomed out here. If we use a Fibonacci retracement, we can say, okay, well, based on this entire run, there's a few different ways we could do it, but based on this huge run here and this pullback, we could say, well, based on a Fibonacci retracement, which brings us all the way to the high, it's telling us that a healthy pullback for gold, once it does peak out and have this capitulation kind of blow off top, we could see gold right back down to 3,500, down to 3,100. That would actually be a healthy pullback for it to build a base and a launch pad before it goes higher. And so, I mean, it's a pretty healthy potential pullback. Percentage-wise, we're looking at 30 to 38%, which, is almost the exact same range that we saw when gold pulled back 34% in the 2007 crash. Silver pulled back over 60%. So these aren't, it may look like a big move on the chart, and it 37% is, but it's a normal move. It's actually a healthy move. If it goes lower than that, it does a lot of damage to the chart for a few different reasons. But overall, that's where we could see it is 31 to 3600 after it tops out. And that to me will be the buying opportunity, very similar to after the 2008 crash. In fact, I'll be excited about physical metals, and I'll pick up more metals once we do see it top out and pull back and correct. But it'll be a time where you want to probably get into precious metal miners, because this is when I think we are starting a new super cycle for equities, for the economy. Everything is reset. Precious metals will still do well. I think you can pretty much throw a dart after we have that correction. And this correction in gold will also mean the stock market is selling off, everything's collapsing. So it's going to be very interesting, but I wouldn't be surprised if we eventually see gold back down at 31, 3600, which I think most people in the space, or at least chasing it higher right now, they don't think or see that's ever possible. They think it's just going up and up and to the right, but that's where the charts are pointing to.
I mean, just like after 2008, that's, to be expected. Chris, would you mind doing the same type of pullback on silver? Because obviously that's been more explosive.
Silver is a big mover. So if we were to do the same type of thing, I'm gonna negate this wick, this 2022 or 2020 kind of wick down. I'm just gonna go that there's a lot of little lows that kind of connect here, just to be a little more conservative. I got the wrong tool. So here we go. So from the low all the way up to the high. Now I do think silver is going to go to about 106. So it goes right up to the top here. That's where the chart is pointing to for silver. Is 106. So it's telling us that we could see silver pull back to the $70 or $60 range, somewhere between the 50 and 38% retracement, or settle in somewhere around that 38. So there's a pretty big pullback in silver. If we were to look, that's about a 30 all the way down to about a 42% pullback potentially in silver. And there's this kind of big shift going on. I think we're seeing more than just a big rally in precious metals. I think we're seeing a shift away from currency and control and what's going on. There's so much. If we look at silver from, let's go way back to the 80s here, 70s, and let's just clear this chart and we'll drop it down to a log scale. This gives you a good idea of what could happen, of where we're at right now. So I kind of feel like this big breakout that we're seeing of over $50, we're going to soon break $100. I feel like this move up is actually going to be very similar to what we saw back over here in the 70s, where we saw this great big move up. And obviously there was big changes back then. And there it was a kind of a generational, it was a big change. And we saw silver and gold pull back. And they didn't crash all the way. It built the launch pad, and then we went and had this euphoric phase. So that's kind of what I think is going to happen. Now, keep in mind that this pullback may not look big, but percentage-wise, it's still a pretty big pullback that silver had. It was still about a 40% pullback before it went off to this move. So what I think could happen is this time is a little different than the previous times, where silver goes up and hits this 106. And then we see that pullback and that consolidation. And then I think we go up and we see this huge explosive rip your face off move that silver goes absolutely ballistic to hundreds of dollars. Gold probably breaks 10,000 and beyond, and everything screams higher. But it's not going to be a straight ride. I think we have to survive a 30, 40, 50% correction and several potential years of it building a new launch pad before that move. So there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of things changing. It's like super exciting. But believe it or not, I'm going against the grain. I'm actually looking to start to trim off some of my physical holdings when I think if gold hits 51, 5200, if silver hits 106, I'm going to be looking to trim off some of my physical metal positions and lock in profits. I believe that, once it finishes having this blow off phase, I want to be out of it, and I think I'll be able to buy it back at a lower price, or buy it back at the same price, or maybe a bit higher, but just as it's about to take off and make me a crap load of money again. I don't want to hold something for 5, 6, 10 years and be dormant. I want that money working somewhere else. So that's where I'm separated from gold. I can sell something that's winning and that's showing signs of losing, and then I can get back into it at a lower or higher price later. When the charts are actually pointing to this is a good time to get in for kind of imminent returns right away.
And I think to kind of reinforce this, Chris, you had mentioned the ETFs. What are the leveraged ETFs in the metal sector doing, and what does that signal to you?
Yeah, I don't have them. I don't remember what they are. The split moment, but what we're seeing like in the silver space, it's really interesting, especially on the daily chart. And again, I don't have the leverage ETF. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I just did a detailed report on this. But it was showing that the volume moving into silver futures has been growing. And then we've got the volume moving into SLV, the silver ETFs is growing. But what's really interesting is the leveraged ETFs. And this is starting to happen right now. The leveraged ETFs and the leveraged inverse ETFs on gold and silver and miners and stuff, when they start to spike, when the volume on those go absolutely ballistic, that's usually right, like days usually before that commodity peaks. And we've seen this in silver. I'm waiting to see the big spikes in the leveraged silver plays and the mining plays. But when everybody piles into the leveraged ETFs and the volume is dramatically different, like 2-3x of what it has been over the last few months, that's usually the sign that it's the last people getting in, the greedy people trying to make as much as they can for the last big, well, for what they think is the start of a big move, but they're actually buying it near the end. And so leverage ETFs are always a very good indicator of, it's usually the last kind of group of people who are trying to squeeze more out of the move into the wrong thing at the very wrong time. And we're starting to see this. There's some, like, I think I heard there's talks of a 4x mining ETF or a 4x gold ETF, like leveraged, trying to come out, or maybe it's even already gone live. But we've seen this in the past. Like, we go back to gold miners, because this isn't just for silver, this is pretty much for any asset class. When we go back into miners and we zoom way back in time, you'll notice that near major peaks in the space is when a whole bunch of leveraged ETFs for miners came out. Because they've already worked really well. Now everybody wants it, like just like right now. Everybody, if a stock or a commodity has the word metal in it, people want it, and it's just screaming higher. It was the same as the AI kind of bubble that's kind of lost a lot of its shine. Everybody wants metals, and that's why now these funds, these firms are making leveraged ETFs on miners and precious metals, because it's such a hot commodity, and they always tend to do it just before the stock market peaks. And then, of course, nobody wants these leveraged things anymore. People lose their shirt because they move into it and lose 2 to 3 or 4 times more money than everybody else because they moved into the wrong fund. These companies build these ETFs, these funds, because there's demand and they're going to make a ton of money. They don't build them for the user to make money. They just want to get them out there so they can get volume and money traded, so they get their percentage of assets under management. But all these things are showing signs to be very aware of. And the leveraged ETFs are a big red flag, and they're starting to really pick up volume, and more of them are coming on the market for the precious metal space to be aware of.
Of course, one of the other metals, Chris, that has had a crazy run lately is copper. Does that enthusiasm extend into that market?
It does. I mean, I'm not a big copper fan just because it's not a commodity that I've ever traded or followed. I'll just go to the monthly chart and kind of zoom way back here. You know, there's a couple of ways to look at it. We've seen, you know, if you kind of just drag across these highs roughly, whenever it gets up into this upper range, we tend to see a pretty big sell-off, a big move down. We keep seeing it push, and we're hitting some all-time highs in copper. I'm never a fan of buying something that's constantly bumping up against a new high that tends to get rejected. So this is a bit of a warning sign. The daily chart definitely shows some short-term weakness. And, you know, I mean, this is very short-term price action, but when we see something rally up, have a very big rally. So it's had a couple moves here. So let's go back one step. Fibonacci extension. Where should this move play out? Fibonacci is you take the low, you find a standout pause, a consolidation, the high, and then you find the low for that, and you carry it forward to where your targets are. And the way Fibonacci works, or the way that I see it, and the way it works for me very well, is if price pauses at the 618, which is considered the golden ratio, the sweet spot, then you've nailed that momentum, that move. And we almost always go up and hit the 100% measured move, which it has done. And now that it's done that, usually after we hit 100% measured move, price goes ballistic. Price starts to go chaotic. people get emotionally like irregulated, and we have a pattern in copper right now. It's called three surges to a high. We make a high, boom, it gets slammed. We make a higher high, it gets slammed. We make a higher high, it gets slammed. Three surges to a high usually ends up in a big sell-off and a big move to the downside. Factor that in at that long-term chart, we're also bumping up into resistance. So I don't know much about copper. I've never traded it. I do chart it for a lot of members because a lot of people do and trade the copper miners, but the chart of copper does not look good. I'm not a fan of this. And we're starting to see some high volume. A lot of them are red bars. So there's some selling going on. And, you know, once you hit these 100% measured moves, you get these ballistic pops, and gold has done the same thing. I mean, one of our recent trades for gold was very similar to that. We had a Fibonacci target here, and people, it's important for people to know once a target is hit, especially using Fibonacci, usually things go a little bit chaotic. So we had this move here to the upside. We had this pullback down to this low. And so we traded. One of our last trades here, we got long gold right here. We hit our first target. We locked in some profits here, moved our stop to entry price to protect ourselves. And then it hit our 100% measured move right here. And then right after that, that's when the market went ballistic. People who weren't in gold had to get back into gold. They weren't happy with a 15% gain. That was pretty much free money. They had to get back in, and the whole world got piled in. It was headline news. You could cut the air with a knife. It was so thick, the emotions, that if you weren't in metals, you were going to be left behind. We were an idiot to sell. And then, of course, it sells off, and then it consolidates for months. And, you know, then we got back long gold, and here we are riding it back up again. But it's understanding how the market moves, understanding the human psychology and how these waves work, and just taking advantage of them. The Fibonacci extension, I've done a video of this on my YouTube channel on how to draw them, how to use them. If you were to learn anything in trading, it's learning how and where to draw Fibonacci extensions and then pulling profit targets off and understanding that, hey, it's good to take a whole bunch of wins. You don't need to get, and this is where most people get it wrong, you don't need to buy here at the bottom and sell at the top. Mm-hmm. What you need is this safe middle zone and to just hit it time and time and time again and have that consistency and let everybody else do all this bottom picking and sweat it out for months or years and try to pick the tops, which they might pick it early or they might not pick it. And then they give back a bunch of gains and it could have a bigger correction. So hopefully that answers your question.
Chris, I've heard you talk before about not being able to trust news-driven moves. Why are these not, you know, durable types of trading events?
Yeah, well, news-driven moves aren't, they're just a surge of fear going through people. And it's always fear in the market. Whether the market's going up, it's people are moving in on news. If it's good news, they have fear of missing out. So they buy in. And when everybody if you were to get startled, but my kids are always trying to scare me in the house. I walk around a corner and they're like, my son will wait for like 8 or 10 minutes knowing I'm going to be coming back. But when you get startled, you know, you make a move very quickly, right? And then it fizzles off and then everything tapers back down. News does the same thing. There's a certain pocket of people so glued to the markets, watching every tick every day, got five news streams going, that when a piece of news comes, there's so many trigger happy traders who think that everything has to be traded, pile in, and they drive the price very quickly. And it's just an emotional move. They're chasing money. I don't believe in trading on news. You can't predict it, and you don't know how people are going to react. But news just creates these surges of emotion, of buying or selling. And so if it's bad news, everybody quickly has to get out of it because the world's going to fall apart and they all hit the sell button. So I would never trade around news. I wouldn't wait for news to come out. Most of our trades, I was talking to our subscribers today. We did a big mentoring session earlier today. And most of our trade, not most of them, a lot of our trades happen to get long the markets the day before or the day of like a Fed meeting. And it's not always, but it drives some members absolutely nutty because everybody thinks what the Fed does, you know, is important. They always think it's going to change the world and you can't step in front of the Fed. But what, you know, when you follow the charts are telling us, we have multiple analysis. We use cycles, money flows, sentiment, all kinds of different stuff, multiple asset flows, tell us what people are doing in big money. The charts are telling us to get in. And if the charts are telling us to get in, that usually means the big money, the smart money is getting into place, into position, and our system picks up on it. And then it plays out in our favor. But people think you have to wait for the news to come out and you have to, you know, let's not trade until the news is hit. But half the time you do that, you miss trades. Or now they've jumped so quickly that you're like, ah, now I don't want to pay a premium to get in. And so trading around news, I think, is a real waste of time, emotional stress. I think you just need to have a strategy that follows price. Price already is already pricing in what is going to happen. And I think this chart we're looking at right now, a trend is more likely to continue than it is to reverse. So whatever dip and blip and piece of news hit through this whole window of time on gold, whether it was good or bad, it should naturally resolve to the upside. The long-term moving average, the green line, is sloping up. So, you know, we've got this huge rising tide. The shorter term moving averages are telling us, you know, that we still have a short term uptrend. They're all layered nicely in here, stacked properly above each other. If you can just step back and look at price action and follow the underlying trend and have some position and money management in place to know when to lock in partial profits, like a Fibonacci golden ratio level and a 100% measured move, and where to put your stops, and actually have the discipline to get out when it gets hit and be like, okay, I was wrong. But protecting your capital is really important, and people don't want to get out of a trade and take a loss. They'd rather not. And eventually not getting out of the market is going to cost you dearly, both in time and a ton of money when we do have a financial reset. They're rare, but it's life-changing in a bad way if you don't take action.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that idea of news-driven events extends to the Nat gas chart over this week here?
I think it must be. I mean, the guy was doing the mentoring session today. He understands the energy space very well, Brian. And he was talking about, he also thinks it could be based around the events unfolding, but supposedly there was a weather forecast. Natural gas can move fairly quickly on weather forecasts. A cold spell could send it surging. I mean, it's up 26% today as you and I are speaking, which is January 21st. It's spiking right up into resistance. From the sounds of it, it sounds like a news-driven event. And we were saying, like, if you were long natural gas and you happen to catch this, and like, this is like, you know, a gift, like take it. Don't get greedy and think, oh my God, it's going to 12, you know, $12. Just, you know, a move on news into resistance that is just a ton of money very quickly. Man, you got to appreciate it and take it. But the problem is, if it made this much money already, think how much it'll make in like another few more days. And this is just the start. Like, that mindset will crush you every time almost.
So Chris, what do you think are the biggest macro factors that are going to have a big effect on the markets this year that we need to be at least aware of, despite, you know, always trying to be, let's say, neutral or technically minded?
I mean, I don't follow the economic data a whole lot. It's really outside my realm. I think what I'm looking at from a big picture scale is I see all the things that usually perform very well before the economy rolls over. Mm-hmm. Precious metals, energy stocks are at all-time highs. Industrial capital goods are at all-time highs. We've got... those things alone are telling us we got to be aware. The other thing that happens in the business cycle is we always tend to have some innovation phase. Some new innovation comes in and just drives the market higher. It re-spurs energy and businesses to start up and spending. And that's the AI bubble. And so that's one other big concern is we've had this innovation phase and it does feel like it's fizzling out. So we've seen records amount of money chasing AI businesses and startups and IPOs. But now we're starting to see, you know, even data centers, there's been a big spike there, but now we're starting to see the financing for IPOs and for data centers and startups in the AI space. They're starting to get rejected. The banks are turning them down. They realize they're overextended. A lot of these companies aren't going to make money anytime soon. They're all about spending and getting the fastest stuff and the craziest tech. They're not about making money yet. And so I think that is coming to an end. When we start to see the belt tighten on a hot sector that they can't get funding anymore, that is a huge red flag. The Magnificent Seven ETF I'll show that one because it actually, to me, is a very big powerhouse for the markets. If we take a look at the Mag 7 ETF, this is the daily chart. It is really treading water here. It's had this pullback into a support zone. It really has kind of got what could be seen as a head and shoulders formation. So you have a shoulder, a head and shoulder. You have this blue neckline. If you break this neckline, usually the distance of the head to the neckline is the amount of move you can see to the downside. So, I mean, this is a pretty barbaric technical analysis, but it works. And so we could see a very big precipitous fall in this space. A 10% move in the mags is going to drag the indices down. It is going to turn the tide from AI on to like AI off. And the thing is, everybody who's piled into the Mag Sevens over the last few years and just has been sending it higher, a lot of it is emotional traders. People have been chasing and buying Nvidia and all of these companies, but once they turn south, start to go down, those people start to jump ship very quickly. They get scared and nervous, and so they should. I mean, but that's going to probably trigger a feeding frenzy in a sell-off. I think we could see a very big move where this eventually will have some bounce, and we could see a huge unwinding, a massive unwinding in the space, which is going to kill the market. So from a macro standpoint, I think the AI space is losing momentum. The stock market's losing momentum. There's always the wild card. What will the governments do? Are they going to do more QE and keep juicing things higher and just keep forcing the markets up? I'm not sure. They're trying to. There's no doubt about it. But at some point, the gold and precious metals are telling us that at some point the world is going to turn. They're going to be net buyers and there's going to turn into net sellers. And once the whole world starts selling, the little Fed is not going to stop the stock market or the economy, people closing their wallets. And of course, they're going to start doing whatever they can to try and save the day. But there's no way I think they're going to be able to save the economy once that landslide starts, because it's going to be worldwide spread. I think it's unstoppable at some point.
You mentioned earlier that your trades often kind of coincide with Fed meetings, but we could see Trump pick a new Fed chair this week. Do you think that there's any ramifications there that we need to be paying attention of, considering, the dichotomy between having a super dovish Fed and a, let's say, realistic Fed chair, and how they, what the difference is in their policy stance?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's just something to watch on TV. I couldn't tell you. That's not my space. But I do think it's going to change the dynamic. So many people follow the Fed and follow what's going on with policy. There's no doubt it's going to affect them, which will then affect them to take action with their portfolios, which then will show up on the charts. And then I just follow those trends. So I let them do the sweating. I let the world figure it out. I just ride the coattails of what the mass psychology, either they're either buying or selling. So I'm a little delayed. I let everybody sweat the bullets, figure it out, start to reposition. And then I just copy what the market is telling us it's doing and go from there. So I keep it as simple as possible.
Well, I mean, in that vein, Chris, when we see tensions escalate in the world, and you, let's say, jumping on the bandwagon, or the momentum, if you will, when we see these tensions escalate, is that a time for you to start looking at the defense sectors, as an example, for a trading opportunity?
If the stock market is going down, then no, because when you say defense sectors, you probably mean like military, aerospace type of stuff. No, because what happens is they're actually doing well right now. There's a lot of stuff going on. They're actually all doing well, had a very nice multi-month run. But what happens when the stock market goes down? It's like the ocean tide. When the tide goes down, what happens to all boats, right? So the stock market is the same. When the stock market is net sellers, people are scared, there's weekly selling going on. If it's a stock stuck in the stock market, it doesn't matter if it's something that's kind of needed, aero defense or defense, it still gets pulled down. And so we just don't want to hold stocks. That's kind of my whole strategy. I've written a book on it, asset revesting, which is to just reinvest our money in whichever asset is going up. And so we will move 100% out of equities, just let it free fall, and we'll move somewhere else. It could be a currency, it could be bonds, we hold precious metals. It could be a cash position. Sometimes there isn't a very good play. You just need to safely sit on the sidelines, earn some interest until there's a better opportunity. And, if things really do collapse, we kick into an inverse ETF mode eventually, where we play the downward legs of the market and we profit from falling pricing. But we need a bloodbath first. We need a bear market to have started. We need the reset to happen when, there's a pretty extreme fear. And then we take advantage of the tide constantly going down. So that's how I go about that.
Chris, you've been speaking about a massive reset coming in the price of oil. What do you mean by reset, and what factors are involved to create that?
Yeah, I mean, we could, I'll show my chart of oil. We take a quick peek. I mean, a massive reset doesn't seem like a lot, in the big picture. I'm just going to zoom way back here. Obviously, we know with the negative spike in oil that anything is possible. That was, I think, a wake-up call for a lot of people that don't ever rule anything out. Be prepared if it goes up and be out of it, or like if you're short, make sure you get long. If it goes down, make sure you're out of it or benefit from falling pricing because you never know how far it's going to go. But, when we look at oil, it definitely has hit this 55, 56 level a few times. Each time it gets down here, it bounces. The long term of oil is clearly to the downside. It's just keeps fading lower. There's a glut of supply. There's tankers floating out in the ocean. Don't know what to do with all their oil. We got a lot of stuff going on with, Greenland and all this other stuff right now that's created a little bit of a pop in oil. Little bit of a kind of war frenzy and movement in there. But I do think we're going to see this support level at $55, $56 per barrel broken. And I think eventually we're going to see a much bigger move to the downside. And I do think we could see price fall down into this $45, per barrel range. In fact, you go back to the monthly chart, and I'll just get rid of this spike here. A lot of people are like, there's no way it's going down that low, but we know it can go negative. So 45 is a pretty high price compared to negative, something. But if you look at the price action overall, we've seen 45 hit many, many times. All of these lows over here, through here, we've seen it come down to these levels quite often. So for it to move down back into this level would be perfectly normal, 40, 45. And that to me is a big reset. I think that is going to do a lot of damage to people who are in here percentage-wise from where it is right now. I mean, we're looking at a 30% correction in oil, which will probably definitely cleanse some of the oil space and put some pressure on the high cost producers. But this low oil will be good for precious metals. I mean, we'll see fuel prices probably come down. There's some benefits to it, of course. Living expenses can come down somewhat. But other than that, I mean, that's where I see crude oil potentially going to be. I think this year, I think we could probably see that hit this year, and the economy, I think, will top this year. There's that other cycle, the Benner cycle, which you may have heard about. This is Samuel Benner, and he's a farmer back in the 1800s. He came up with this cycle that plays out. And there's two different cycles layered in here. You've got the shorter term cycle, then you got these longer term cycles, and he's nailed a few of them. We had the tech bubble, we had the 2007 financial crisis, we had the COVID in 2020. It's saying now 2026 is the next high. It's the next time of high pricing and to sell everything with value because we're going to go down. And he's talking about we're having a downward spell till 2032. So we've got a few years of potential really crappy times, a reset. And now this isn't accurate. Not all of these cycles he's put out here has played in, but trading and investing, it's about lining up as much data as you can, understanding it could happen. And if it could happen, you should have a strategy to make sure you see it coming, that you can take advantage of it. You don't want to be caught off guard being like, crap, I knew it was coming. I just didn't know what to do. And now it's too late to sell. And that's where I come in. I help people identify when there's a turning point and be like, okay, let's move our portfolio to a different asset, or let's move it to safety on the sidelines until there is an asset that actually gives us an opportunity. So this downward move here, I think, could play into oil going down. I think the pricing of oil is already factoring in and are seeing that there's going to be global weakness, less business, less travel, less shipping, you know, less demand for oil. And so this is just another one of those warning flags. I mean, we've rhymed off probably like 15 or 20 things that are waving a big red flag saying, you know, watch out, like this, things are slowly building. So I do, eventually we are going to have a massive financial reset. It's just the question of when. And it's not about being able to time when it's going to happen. It's just being able to identify when it's happening so that you can avoid it and take advantage of it. And I've been calling for a bear market for a very long time, for several years, yet we keep riding the markets higher and it drives people nuts. They're like, you're always bearish. And unfortunately, people take a bearish position because I say, I think there's a big reset coming, but they don't realize, you know, even though I say I'm long and we're riding the trends higher in equities and things like that, they naturally, people go to what they hear and what scares them the most, and they'll follow that. Fear really drives most decisions for those who don't have a strategy or a game plan. And I like to say it to scare people, so you get a freaking plan. But people, for some reason, you know, go short, or they bet on the markets falling, or they don't get in, even though they're still trending up. Like, you just need to have a strategy. But people are strategy-less, right? They drift and they're discretionary traders. They only make a trade when they feel pressured. They feel like they're missing out or they can't take the heat anymore.
So in that idea of getting off to the sidelines and getting to a place of safety, Chris, is how do you think the dollar, the US dollar, looks at this point, you know, despite all of the news that we hear about the world trying to divest from dollars?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about the collapse of the dollar for a long time. Ever since I got into trading, geez, I was like 16 and I heard the dollar was going to collapse and silver was going to be hundreds of dollars. There's always been this big short squeeze talk and all this stuff, right? The dollar, when you look at a shorter term chart, it's trying to carve out a bottom. It really is trying to find a base. I do like the dollar if the economy goes down the tubes. I think we'll see the US dollar shine. I think it will rise above other currencies. I think it generally has in the past. So I do think it still has that potential. It is in a pattern on the monthly chart that, depending what happens, like, who knows what's going to happen, what's going on with, you know, Trump and Greenland. And now we got the Europeans, you know, wanting to dump US bonds. We could see huge unloading. We could see interest rates spike. In fact, you know, I'll pull up the chart because it's actually pretty interesting. And a lot of people don't agree with this, but this is what the chart is saying. So, for example, we could see people really, really hate the United States and dump treasuries. And I'm just going to go back to a non-log scale here. So this is the 10-year rate. Rate's been going down forever. Ever since I was born, they've been going down. And now they've turned a corner. Now we have rates going up and they're building a bull flag. The chaos that is hitting right now is pretty scary. We could see bonds collapse. We could see interest rates skyrocket. And it is showing that we could go up to an 8%+ rate, a yield. So if that happens, obviously it's going to wreak havoc on the debt problem. It's going to wreak havoc on real estate, on everything. Now, 8% isn't the end of the world. Felt like we were there forever. Growing up, my dad was big into real estate. He had over like 1,500 doors at one point, and I thought like 7-8% was the norm growing up for mortgages. And so to me, like 8% doesn't seem too bad, but man, I'll tell you, after being at like near zero and down here, and the amount of leverage everybody has, and if we were to go up to this level, the bond market in the US could get hit so hard, and rates shoot through the roof, the United States becomes higher risk, which usually ends up with a higher yield, a higher rate. So anyway, there's a lot unfolding that is just, we need to be aware that I think this year, I think, is a pivotal year. I think something very big, whether the equities markets or precious metals explode and go higher, or that everything blows up and reverses and crashes and maybe rates go up. I don't know, but you just need to have a game plan, because right now we got the most amount of people close to retirement or retired the most amount of people have ever, have the most money they've ever had. There's a lot to lose, and the market is very good at ruining people's dreams. And right when you think you've got it figured out and you made it through life and you got your savings, you end up giving it all back or a huge chunk of it. Mm-hmm. The market is great at hurting the largest group of people at the worst possible time. And I feel like that is the perfect storm that's been brewing. I've been talking about it for several years, and everybody needs a game plan, because when it does happen, if you're not ready, it's lights out. We saw in 2008, there was like 8,100 suicides just in the United States directly linked to falling stock prices. That goes to show how severe this is. People think the 2020 crash and the 2022 little bear market was painful. That is nothing compared to a financial reset. This is like life-changing, life-threatening, marriage-breaking, business-breaking. Like, so a lot of people in the markets right now haven't been through it, right? And that's what people need to be aware of. The problem is they don't take action. Everybody's reactionary. They won't take action until it's kind of too late. And then they're already down a lot. And then they always say the same thing. Well, I'm down this much. I might as well just ride it out. I'll be fine. I'll just hold it. But you end up going through a lot more pain as prices keep collapsing. And then you go like 5-10 years of no return, clawing your way back. And I'll tell you, as I'm getting older, man, time is money. The last thing I want to do is feel stressed on money, downgrade my lifestyle, and have to wait 10 years to feel where I'm at right now financially. So that's the big message I'm just trying to share. I'm trying to let people know that, yes, I've been wrong expecting a bear market to happen over the last couple of years, but man, I'm ready and my subscribers are ready. So when the time comes, we're going to be laughing. We can't wait for it because it's a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. Big money to be made on the downside, huge money to be made to reinvest it in a lot of stuff after that. So those are the big, big things unfolding, and watching bonds and watching the yield here and what's going to happen overseas with the world kind of turning their back. It feels like on the United States here with short term, what's going on. We're in the middle of a real storm, and gold and silver are definitely telling that that's the case. Mm-hmm.
Excellent, Chris. Well, as we wrap up here, maybe give us a quick idea of where you see opportunity right now, or maybe safety is a better place to think about.
So, we're still long equities. The stock market is still grinding its way higher. We're long precious metals, gold and silver, mm-hmm. and that's about it. Now, I do feel like this year is the year I'll probably be selling off some precious metals, I think sooner than later, and probably the next few weeks or months, depending when we get this big blow off spike, if we get it. I think there's upside left. I still think there's, 7 to 15% upside in gold. I think there's potentially 15 to 20% upside in silver, maybe higher. Platinum actually looks pretty good. Looks like about a 20, 25% move upside in platinum. But I think these are all short-term moves. I think all these could happen in the next month or two. So if the stock market or the precious metals have this one final pop and push, I'd be looking to lock in some gains. So I think you still need to be long stocks and precious metals. And until it shows signs that we're in a frothy capitulation, kind of topping peak. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, Chris, of course, for anybody that wants more of your information, more of your trading strategy, that's all available at thetechnicaltraders.com and of course on X at the Tech Traders. Chris, always a pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure. Take care.